Hello, this is Gavin from The Wooden Sky, and you're listening to CJUM 101.5 UMFM at the University of Manitoba.
Well, I dreamt last night you were making love to a bird you swore you'd given up. Oh, I woke up shaking.
Thank you. All right, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to 52nd Street, Winnipeg's home of classic jazz. My name is Jay. For the next hour, I'll be your host right here on 101.5 UMFM. And we're doing a Father's Day show tonight. And it is our theme. That's right, we have a theme. Always concerning if we have a theme. Our theme is the fathers of jazz. Now, as it turns out, there are more fathers than mothers of jazz, although I would say to you that there's a lot of overlooked mothers of jazz. We've talked about that in the Mother's Day show. But today we're talking about the fathers of jazz. And we started off with somebody who actually said he invented jazz, the great Jelly Roll Morton and his Red Hot Peppers, a song called Grandpa's Spells. That went from about 1923. And Jelly Roll Morton was an incredible piano player, and you'll hear in his left hand the beginning of that stride style that became so important, especially in Harlem. So we're going to play a couple of more tracks now. Whether or not he invented jazz, hard to know. The beginnings of jazz are unclear, but many people consider this next band to be the very first recorded jazz. It, of course, is the original Dixieland jazz band, and we're going to play a song called Tiger Rag. And, of course, jazz came into this sort of this rag improvisational style that became sort of part of the basis to its improvisation and the style of jazz. So we're going to start there with the original Dixieland jazz band and the song called Tiger Rag. And then from there, I'm going to take you back to New Orleans. And when we talk about New Orleans, that New Orleans style of jazz, we're going to talk a little bit in a few minutes about Louis Armstrong. Because I would say to you that there are five, some people say six, but I'm going to give you five names that have absolutely shaped the course of jazz. Louis Armstrong is one. Duke Ellington is one. Miles Davis is one. John Coltrane is one. And then Charlie Parker is one. On top of that, a lot of people put Dizzy Gillespie. I would actually suggest to you that probably the person that you should put on top of that list in the last 40 years is Wynton Marsalis. Different conversation for a different time, and we will have that conversation, just not right now. Right now, we're going to go back in time to 1917. Some of the first recorded jazz and the original Dixieland jazz band. So this is a white group, which is very controversial because it's a white group that records the first record. And then we're going to jump ahead a few years, probably about 1923, 24. Snake Rag, which is another rag. So you can hear the sort of progression of rags from King Creole's Creole jazz band, which is really the hotbed, the traditional New Orleans style of jazz. And then I'm going to come back and talk to you for a second. Then I'm going to play for you something very special. But first, let's start with a couple of rags, Tiger Rag and Snake Rag, both right here on 52nd Street. Thank you. What'd you think of that? Early jazz, 1920s, early 1920s. We start, of course, with that rag style. You know, and jazz has so many influences. We talk about that born in the blues is the old saying, the influence of blues, the syncopated rhythm and style that becomes so important, the improvisational style, and how jazz grows as a popular form of music out of ragtime. And, you know, that these two rags that we just heard, Tiger Rag and Snake Rag. And ragtime was a very popular form of music starting about 1890, often piano led, not in those cases, and Scott Joplin, of course, would be the person that you hear of Maple Leaf Rag or others. And these are sort of they're sort of marches that have four parts, and there's a lot of recurring themes in the bass line, and the structure as the basis for this sort of syncopated style, and eventually leads to this more of improvisational style. Now, King Oliver's Creole jazz band that you just heard doing Snake Rag becomes important because they have a very young trumpet player in the group whose name is Louis Armstrong. Louis Armstrong, I think, pushes jazz ahead about 100 years, but you'll hear in a second what I mean by that. There's a strong tradition in New Orleans, and of course, we didn't get to recording until 20 years later, but many think that Buddy Bolden, the great New Orleans, now infamous New Orleans cornetist, is really the founding father of jazz, and that may be, we don't know. Louis Armstrong certainly seems to think so, and he seems to think that everything that he knew and everything he learned came from Buddy Bolden, and so I think it's clear to say that, like all things, these are things that are built on top of each other. For us, the difficulty is that recording starts sort of midway through this progression, and so we have this idea that Livery Stable Blues from the original Dixieland Jazz Band is the first jazz record, and probably it is, but the reality, of course, is that jazz as a form of music had been developing and probably had been developed long before we even knew about it. So why is Louis Armstrong so important? Well, virtuosity, evening out those syncopated rhythms, clarity of tone, clarity of his playing, the melodic and lyrical parts of his playing, and his overall ability to improvise over and over and over again. I read once somewhere that there's like a Chicago businessman that brought him into a studio and said, I want you to play breaks, like these sort of breaks that you do to start a solo, and I want to record them, and then I'm going to transcribe them. And he did something like 200 breaks. He just kind of sat in front of the microphone and played 200 breaks. And that's the kind of genius that you're dealing with. So I'm going to play for you two very important trumpet players now. Louis Armstrong, without question, a massive contributor to jazz. In fact, takes jazz from what you just heard to what you know in terms of that swinging, kind of danceable, smoothed out kind of style. There's still some syncopation to it. There's still some things there. And then after that, I'm going to play for you somebody else. Somebody who is, I think, far too often overlooked. In fact, I'm going to say today, for the purposes of our show, I'm going to call him the founding father of smooth jazz. And the reason for that is because his style, his approach was very lyrical. It was very smooth compared to Louis Armstrong. It was very laid back compared to Louis Armstrong. And Lester Young used to say of the album I'm going to play for you, this is a record I listened to and the record I learned to play from. So this is a trumpet player that influences Lester Young, who in turn, and a saxophone player, who in turn influences Miles Davis, who in turn influences people like Stan Getz and that whole West Coast jazz scene that we know so well. So yeah, we have the birth of the cool in 1949, but 1929, we have Frankie Trombauer on the C melody saxophone and Bix Beiderbecke on trumpet, and they're going to play a song called Singing the Blues, which I would contend to you is the first and the most important album in the history of cool jazz. So we're going to give Bix Beiderbecke and Frankie Trombauer the nod as founding fathers of cool jazz. We're going to get to them in a second, but I'm intentionally going to play it back to back with Louis Armstrong. Now, lots and lots you can say about Louis Armstrong as a trumpet player. I don't think you can overlook him as a scat singer. I think his scat style was not only crucial for jazz vocals, but also for improvisation generally. And of course, he had a massive, massive personality, though he was actually quite a humble man. I'm not going to play you a song, though, with the scat singing. I was going to play West End Blues. I was going to play, you know, Potato Head Blues, all those kind of classic New Orleans things. But I want to play for you a song that's recorded in 1928. It's just a duo. It's Louis Armstrong on trumpet, Earl Father Hines on piano. And it's just 5 years after the King Oliver track that you heard. And listen to how far ahead he is, because we got that sort of those stilted sort of 4-4 beats and sort of that syncopated rhythm, that back and forth. And then Louis Armstrong comes and just kicks the door wide open. I personally think this may be Louis Armstrong's greatest recording as a trumpet player. The song is called Weatherbird. It's recorded in 1928. It's just Louis and Earl Father Hines. We're going to play that. And then right after that, we're going to play two great trumpets in a row. And in fact, I think these are the two most important foundational trumpet players in jazz. Louis Armstrong on the hot side, the swing side. And then on the cool side, Bix Beiderbecke featuring Frankie Trombauer on the C melody, which is the tenor sax is a B flat instrument. The C melody is a little bit different tuning. It was actually an instrument that could be used to play off of piano music so that you didn't have to transcribe the music. And so for a lot of people, it was a cheaper way to play. But the two of them created this great sound with Singing the Blues. Two classic songs coming up right now, Weatherbird and Singing the Blues, right here on 52nd Street. Thank you. I think I'm done. I think I can just kind of stop the show now. That was 6 minutes of genius. I don't know what you want me to say. And I would argue with you that if you put those two recordings together, not only are they, to my mind, the best of the two recordings that those two musicians made, and I know there's a lot of people that are going to write in right now about the Louis Armstrong one. And I say write in because you're listening to a jazz show on radio, so let's be honest, nobody's calling or texting. It's going to be a handwritten letter. Many pages, beautiful calligraphy. I think it's brilliant. And I think the reason it's so good is because 1928, that is at least 10 years ahead of where everybody else is. You know, it's interesting because we're going to play a song in a second by the founding father of the big band. And when it's Fletcher Henderson, when Louis Armstrong joined Fletcher Henderson's band in New York, guys were laughing at him because he came in kind of dressed like a bit of a country bumpkin. And these guys were all these sort of sophisticated Harlem based New York, musicians who were the best in the country and were part of the great African American Renaissance movement, with W.B. Du Bois and Marcus Garvey and sort of that thought process that was going on at the time. And they say Louis Armstrong started playing and then everybody started playing like Louis Armstrong. So the genius was there, and it was my miles ahead of everybody else, and it took time for people to see it, but more than anyone probably, he shapes early jazz and turns into what we know, because I think the reality is, you know, you heard those rags, and I'm sure they were great, and don't get me wrong, if you're wearing a flapper dress and listening to the show, we really appreciate your support. But more than that, I think the reality is, if jazz had kind of stuck to that rag style, I think it would have died. I don't think it would have gone anywhere. And I think with Louis Armstrong, he sort of saw this opportunity for improvisation, saw this opportunity to bring in these different styles, brought in this tradition, this Buddy Bolden tradition, and took it somewhere that I don't know that it would have gone otherwise, or maybe it would have, but it would have taken a lot longer. With Big Spiderback, you get somebody who has a very different style, a much cooler style, and I'd suggest to you that wherever you trace cool jazz through, and whether that's sort of that hot or cool, and the important things that come with the cool jazz later on, I don't think that you can look past that album. I don't think you can look past Big Spiderback. So those two tracks, as dichotomous as they are, really represent, in a lot of ways, the tension in jazz, but really represent the early history of jazz and the way that jazz grows and develops from there. So, coming up next, I'm going through the show far too quickly, but I'm not going to get to all the Founding Fathers tonight, so maybe it's going to be a two-part series, which just is not an endorsement of the patriarchy, but just I'm talking too much. Coming up next is we're going to switch to big bands. So the 1920s, we get the emergence of big bands. You already heard King Oliver's Big Band, that exact group that started early in the 1920s following Kid Ory's Big Band in New Orleans. And so that big band style had really come out of New Orleans originally, believe it or not. And they're smaller groups, but the idea of a larger ensemble. The band idea moves to Chicago. It moves to New York as well. And, you know, as is often the case, when you have popular music, groups are formed to popularize and start to create different sounds and different ideas. One of the first big bands, and certainly probably not the first, but one of the first big bands, one of the most important, is Fletcher Henderson's band. Now, Fletcher Henderson was actually from Georgia, and he was a student of, I think it was biochemistry. He's doing like a master's degree at Columbia or some ridiculous thing like this. And like really, really smart guy and a piano player, and starts playing around New York, and eventually falls in with this thing that's happening in the 1920s, this sort of rag style piano that becomes so important, that merges into Harlem Stride. And he starts playing and starts getting involved in that music scene, and he starts to do something different and take it in a different direction. And this isn't supposed to be a history of jazz, and I probably should play somebody like a James P. Johnson or something like that in terms of that Harlem Stride style piano, but to give you a sense of it. But he starts to do something different in the same way that the original jazz, Dixieland jazz band, changed ragtime into sort of what we now think of as jazz. Fletcher Henderson really takes it and takes this idea of the bigger group that was obviously not just happening in New York, but across the country, as we've heard, and really starts to modernize it and make it more sophisticated. And an interesting thing happens because he starts hiring incredible musicians. Coleman Hawkins, the founding father of the tenor saxophone, joins the band in 1924. He stays for 10 years. Louis Armstrong joins the band, and a host of other incredible musicians, some of whom will go on to play with Duke Ellington and be a part, other part of the swing era, some of whom die early, which is too bad because they were leaders in their on their instruments and really innovative, and some of whom sort of disappear into the annals of jazz history. What's interesting is Fletcher Henderson, though, probably through sheer chance, starts the first big band arrangements. And this is why Fletcher Henderson's band becomes so important. It's actually Don Redmond in 1924 that writes the first syncopated arrangements for big bands. And so even though we talk about Fletcher Henderson, it's actually Don Redmond, who is a saxophone player in the band, who is really the first big band arranger. And that's the reason Fletcher Henderson's band becomes so important. Not only was it a who's who of jazz musicians, and, you know, that sort of seminal group that becomes, you know, the tree that everybody comes out of, but it's this, it's the arrangements that become so important. So as we move through, slowly as it turns out, as we move through the history of jazz and the founding fathers of jazz, we're going to turn now to big band music, and we're going to play a couple of tracks in a row. We're going to start off with Fletcher Henderson and Shanghai Shuffle. I think this is a 1926 version. Then we're going to hear from Duke Ellington, because I've said to you before, there's no question that one of the five most important innovators, top 10 without question, is Duke Ellington. He's, I think he's always in the top five. So, and we're going to hear from him, and the song is going to be Sophisticated Lady. And the reason I want to put that down is because I want to give you a sense of what Ellington was doing harmonically and what Ellington was doing in terms of the sophistication. So, Fletcher Henderson, very advanced group, great group, important group in jazz. And then Ellington comes along and just takes it to a new level, right? He's sort of the Beethoven of jazz in terms of what he does with the arrangements and how he writes for different musicians and how he expresses things and how he takes the big band sound and very, very subtly turns it into this artistic way to express incredibly different pieces of Americana at the time, social protest at times, of life generally, just in the true artistry that is Duke Ellington. So we're going to start off with Fletcher Henderson and Shanghai Shuffle, and then we're going to write into Duke Ellington. This is a very early version of Duke Ellington's band with a Sophisticated Lady. I think it's from 1932, both right here on 52nd Street. Thank you. that. You know, every once in a while, I don't know about you, but every once in a while you listen to Duke Ellington and you just kind of say, like, where does that come from? you heard a phenomenal record before in Shanghai Shuffle, a record that was years ahead, and everybody in the U.S. was trying to emulate that, and it was just years ahead of where everybody else was. And this incredible band, and then Duke Ellington comes in with this subtlety and the sophistication and this these just harmonic tones that are just, like, where do they come from? And at what point do you think, you know, if I just keep adding layers, people are going to love it? And that they did. The records sold millions, and he became the Duke Ellington that we know and love today. And I don't think we could ever do enough tribute to him and the work that he does. All right. So I was going to get through a lot more Founding Fathers of Jazz today, but the problem is I've got a limited time, and as we move on, some of the songs get a little bit longer. So I'm going to split this up. So next week, we're going to do Founding Fathers of Jazz Part 2, and we're going to talk about wherever we end off. I know where we're going to end off today. As you know, this is a well-prepared, well-oiled machine, 52nd Street show. And not at all the spirit of jazz, not at all improvised in any way. And so we're going to just keep playing some Founding Fathers, and then next week we're going to move into hopefully the more modern pieces. And yeah, we'll challenge us a little bit. I'm sort of thinking about the idea of doing punk jazz next week. Just to introduce you to the concept, John Zorn 1986 album introducing thrash, punk, and metal, and jazz, just in case you're wondering. But we're not there yet, and we will take a little while to get there. So let's take our time and just kind of go through it. And it's sort of a bit of a history of jazz, too, for those of you out there that care. So we're going to do this. We're going to do a couple more songs from the swing era, and that's going to take us pretty close to the end of the show. And I want to highlight sort of three really important sort of, I'll call them fathers of jazz here. The first is, we're going to play a little bit of Benny Goodman. We're going to play the song that launched the swing era. And for, in that reason, Benny Goodman is probably the founding father of the swing era. Now, many of his arrangements actually came from Fletcher Henderson, so take it with a grain of salt. But from a popularization of the swing era, from the explosive swing movement that we saw and that we knew and that we sort of relived in the 1990s, this is the starting point. We're going to do that from first. We're going to do the song that launched it, King Porter Stomp. That's the theme song, really. And then after that, I'm going to play for you, you know what, little one o'clock jump. I'm going to play Count Basie. The reason I'm going to play Count Basie is because because he takes over the band from Benny Moten, but really he becomes the founding father of the Kansas City style of jazz, and it becomes so important for a couple of reasons. Number one is Kansas City jazz is a very different, much more laid back, lots and lots of space, and creates a very different style to the very multi-layered kind of sophistication that you just heard from Duke Ellington. And number two, though, more importantly, is Kansas City jazz becomes incredibly important, less so for jazz and more so for rock and roll, because the stream of jazz that flows from Kansas City jazz eventually becomes something like jump jazz or jump blues, and then that sort of R&B side that leads eventually to the formation of rock and roll. So in so many ways, what you're going to hear in Count Basie is this bringing back this idea of blues, and it's not an unknown idea. In fact, it's a very, very important idea, because as we reintegrate the blues back into jazz, right, jazz is born out of the blues, and then jazz brings the blues back in, it creates a different stream of jazz. And so hopefully we'll have time today, but we'll play a little bit of that jump blues that becomes so important, because by the late 1930s and early 1940s, you're starting to get the records that really become incredibly influential. We all know, of course, that Rock of 88 is now accepted as the first ever song in the history of rock and roll, the first ever rock and roll song. But Rocket 88 has roots that go back 10 years at least, to places like Houston, Texas, and all across the U.S. and across the U.S. South, but more importantly, the U.S. Southwest, where this kind of this blues integration becomes so crucial for fueling what becomes that R&B movement and what leads into the rock and roll movement. Different conversation, perhaps, for a different time, and I've always said I'll do a show on it, but I never do. Maybe one day. Anyway, so let's go back. So founding father of the swing era, at least in print. The great Benny Goodman with King Porter Stomp, featuring Bunny Berrigan on the trumpet solo, which my grandfather would be upset if I didn't say. And then Count Basie and his version of 1 o'clock Jump, which is just, as much as it's a hit and it swings, listen for the space, listen for the rhythm. And the thing with Count Basie's band is listen how far they are off the beat, because they're always just a little bit behind the beat, creating a bit of tension. So here we go, as we do some Founding Fathers of Jazz with Benny Goodman and Count Basie, both right here on 52nd Street.
Mm-hmm.
What'd you think of that? There you go, little Count Basie with 1 o'clock jump. A song originally called Blue Balls that was changed on the air because, as you can imagine, not a track for the faint of heart. All right, I'm going to play one quick Louis Jordan tune because I can't. So here's the plan. We're going to end tonight. We're going to play some Louis Jordan. Then I'm going to come back and talk about the founding father of the tenor saxophone. And I'm going to play that song for a very specific reason because it, in my view, is a song that breaks open the jazz world. And I'm going to talk about that in a second. Louis Jordan, many of you will know. So we talk about Count Basie's band. And what happens is, as we get into bebop at later times, there's a return to this kind of blues style, the simpler style. And whether you want to call it jump blues or early R&B or whatever it may be, it creates a whole new sound called the R&B sound. And this really comes out of the jump blues. So it comes out of the blues, it comes out of the jazz, and then we get sort of players. Count Basie's band is, I think, the very early part of it, but you get people like Arnett Cobb, and then a group of others that come out of it that integrate blues and jazz, bring them back together, and form this R&B style. Louis Jordan comes out of it. I'm speaking quickly because we're going to run out of time. And records the song Saturday Night Fish Fry, 1949. It's released in 1950. Some people say it's the first version of rap, the first rap song. A lot of people point to it in that regard. Some people say it's the first rock and roll song. Lots and lots of contention around that. It is the first song to use a distorted guitar sound. And it actually is the first song that uses a word rocking in that era. You know, there's a lot of songs that use rocking in earlier eras for different ways, for different reasons, many of which were banned. So I'm going to play you Louis Jordan's Saturday Night Fish Fry. It's actually two parts. It's the two sides of a 78, side A and side B. It's actually in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And so you will hear, in playing Louis Jordan, the influence from Count Basie. I think it's very, very clear, actually. You'll also hear a little bit of Louis Armstrong and his vocals. And by the way, if you're a Little Richard fan and you ever listen to Caledonia, that is absolutely where he's said it many times. That's where Little Richard gets his shouting and screaming from us, from Louis Jordan. You won't hear it here as much. So from 1950, actually recorded in 1949, Louis Jordan and his Timpani Five. This is actually, we're jumping ahead a bit, but I'm going to call him the founding father of jump blues and R&B because I think in every way he is. But this is an interesting thing because he takes a group of five guys and replaces big bands and gives this kind of great sound that becomes a huge hit. So from 1949, released in 1950, the first rap song, maybe? The first rock and roll song? Probably not. A huge influence on everybody and a fun song? Absolutely. Louis Jordan and Saturday Night Fish Fry.
Now, if you ever been down to New Orleans, then you can understand just what I mean. Now, all through the week, it's quiet as a mouse, but on Saturday night, they go from house to house. You don't have to pay the usual admission if you're a cook or a waiter or a good musician. So if you happen to be just passing by, stop in at the Saturday Night Fish Fry. It was rocking. It was rocking. You never seen such scuffling and shuffling till the break of dawn. It was rocking. It was rocking. You never seen such scuffling and shuffling till the break of dawn. Now my buddy and me was on the main stem, fooling around, just me and him. We decided we could use a little something to eat, so we went to a house on Rampart Street. We knocked on the door and it opened with ease, and a lush little miss said, "Come in, please." And before we could even bat an eye, we were right in the middle of a big fish fry. It was rocking. It was rocking. You never seen such scuffling and shuffling till the break of dawn. It was rocking. It was rocking. You never seen such scuffling and shuffling till the break of dawn. Now the folks was having the time of their life, and Sam was jiving Jimmy's wife, and over in the corner was a beat-up grand being played by a big fat piano man. Now some of the chicks wore expensive frocks, some of them had on bobby socks, but everybody was nice and high at this particular Saturday Night Fish Fry. It was rocking. It was rocking. You never seen such scuffling and shuffling till the break of dawn. It was rocking. It was rocking. You never seen such scuffling.
shuffling and shuffling till the break of dawn. Now my buddy and me, we fell right in and we hollered, let the joy begin. Now we figured this was a good place to play, cause the party was already underway. But all of a sudden the lights went low and everybody made straight for the front door. Man, I was so scared I didn't know where to go. I stood right there and I fell on the floor.
It was rocking. It was rocking. You never seen such scuffling and shuffling till the break of dawn. It was rocking. It was rocking. You never seen such scuffling and shuffling till the break of dawn.
Now the women was screaming and jumping and yelling. The bottles was flying and the fish was smelling. And way up above all the noise they made, somebody hollered, better get out of here, this is a raid. I didn't know we were breaking the law, but somebody reached over and hit me on the jaw. They had us blocked off from the front to the back, and they were putting them in the wagon like potato sacks.
It was rocking. It was rocking. You never seen that scuffling and shuffling till the break of dawn. It was rocking. It was rocking. You never seen that scuffling and shuffling till the break of dawn.
I knew I could get away if I had a chance, but I was shaking like I had the St. Vitus dance. Now I tried to crawl under a bathtub when the policeman said, where you going now, bub? Now they got us out of there like a house of fire, put us all in that black mirage. Now they might have missed a pitiful view, but they got both me and my buddy too.
It was rocking. It was rocking. You never seen that scuffling and shuffling till the break of dawn. It was rocking. It was rocking. You never seen that scuffling and shuffling till the break of dawn.
We headed for jail in a dazed condition. They put each one of us on suspicion. Now my chick came down and went my bail and finally got me out of that rotten jail. Now, if you ever want to get a fist in your eye, just mention a Saturday night fish fry. I don't care how many fish in the sea, but don't ever mention a fish to me.
It was rocking. It was rocking. You never seen that scuffling and shuffling till the break of dawn. It was rocking. It was rocking. You never seen that scuffling and shuffling till the break of dawn.
Give me one of them damn fish sandwiches.
Get away from that, boy.
There you go. From 1949 to 1950, that is the great Louis Jordan and Saturday Night Fish Fry. We're getting tonight's version of Founding Fathers of Jazz with Coleman Hawkins, who is the founding father of the tenor saxophone. And I'm very eager to play this song because not only is it a personal favorite of mine and one that I performed when I was a young saxophonist, but it's an important, very important, I think, song in the history of jazz. And I'm going to tell you why, because next week we're going to pick up with Charlie Parker and Dizzy Gillespie and bop and all that modern kind of stuff. But it doesn't happen without this song. Coleman Hawkins from 1934 to 1939 leaves Fletcher Henderson's band after spending 10 years in Henderson's band and goes to Europe. And when he comes back, the swing scene has emerged, and there's a number of great musicians around and great saxophone players, and he's challenged. He was the reigning king of the tenor saxophone before he left for Europe, and when he comes back, there's a lot of great tenor saxophone players, including people like Lester Young and Chu Berry and others who had really taken on a reputation. People thought that Coleman Hawkins was done. By this time, Hawkins was 30 years old and, you know, sort of thought to be over his prime, which isn't the case. And so he sits down and he records this song. And it's the first song